You know, we started a new series here last week talking about Daniel, and Pastor John did such a great job last week introducing us to this young man, this incredible individual. He told us how his life was drastically changed. His dreams were taken from him as he was taken from his homeland into captivity, and he found himself in Babylon. That was not the dream that he had for his life, and yet he did not lose his faith in his God. His dreams may have been taken away from him, but God was still in control. As a matter of fact, in verse 17 of chapter 1, the Bible tells us that even though Daniel had lost his dreams, God gave him the ability to interpret the dreams and visions of others. And so that brings us to the beginning of the story of Daniel chapter 2. Now, it's amazing as we read in Daniel chapter 2 that over 2,600 years ago, God gave one of the most concise prophetic words about what was going to take place for the rest of time to Daniel in that chapter. Now, it's not uncommon for God to give visions and dreams to his people. But what's more amazing is the fact that this dream wasn't just given to Daniel, it was also given to one of the most wicked kings to ever be, and that was Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. It's amazing that God would use him to be the one that would bring this dream about. So as we start out in the second chapter of Daniel, we find out that this is the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign in Babylon. Now let me take you back to last week so that we can make sure that we understand where chapter 2 fits, because sometimes we read the Bible and we just make the assumption that the events that happen in one chapter naturally follow the next chapter, when in actuality, it would almost seem that the events that are taking place in chapter 2 fit somewhere inside of the events of chapter 1. You see, in chapter 1, Daniel was taken into captivity and he was put into a schooling program. We're told in verse chapter 5 that that education program was going to last for 3 years. And so if we're starting now in the second chapter in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, then it would make sense then that what we're about to hear started during Daniel's second year of school. And so we can think of it, if he's in a three-year program, he's somewhere in high school, maybe a junior in high school, or maybe it's a college program and he's a college student. But he's not much older than that, and he has definitely not moved in to be one of the wise men, one of the people of influence in the kingdom. And so we jump in the story. It's the second year of King Nebuchadnezzar's reign. And although he had secured his kingdom through military conquest and by bringing into captivity his enemies, he was very nervous about the political landscape. He had anxiety about what was going to happen in the future. You see, this anxiety that stirred up inside of him was because of a reoccurring dream that God Almighty had given him. It was a vivid, nightmarish dream. One that he could not understand, though he understood that it was an ominous dream. Now, how many of you have ever had a reoccurring dream? You know, you've had a dream that's come back over and over. So we read this sometimes and we think, you know, he had a reoccurring dream. Well, I've never had a reoccurring dream that happened multiple nights in a row. Usually it's weeks or months away. Usually it takes place here and then it happens again later. And when we have the dream, it's so vivid at the time. Some parts stand out of our mind, but others are kind of hazy. You know, I've woken up from one of those dreams trying to recall, and the more awake I became, the more foggy the dream became. Have you ever had one of those that you woke up in the middle of it and you tried to race back to sleep so you could finish out and find what happened? It doesn't work. So we can't turn it on and off. We can't get back to the story. So frustrating. Why don't dreams come with DVR? I don't understand. And yet there's other times where you wake up in a panic and you don't want to finish that dream, only to find yourself after your bathroom break still running from that thing still chasing you. So I don't understand how it all works, but what I understand is Nebuchadnezzar was concerned, and he was so concerned because partly he couldn't remember the full details. He could remember pieces and parts, and some was fuzzy, and he would have the dream again, and he knew that he needed to know what it was about, but he didn't know how. And so the Bible tells us that he called for his counselors. Since he couldn't really recount the details of the dream, he gave an astounding challenge to his counselors. Instead of asking them to interpret the dream as he told it to them, he demanded that they tell them both the dream and the interpretation. It's like, I can imagine being one of the wise men and thinking how unfair this request is. How in the world am I supposed to tell you the dream you had? Like, you got to give us the details of the dream and then we can tell you all about it. But how in the world can we interpret what we didn't dream it? We don't know. Matter of fact, Daniel chapter 2, verse 10 and 13 records their struggle. It says, the astronomers answered the king, there is not a man in heaven or earth who can do what the king has asked. No king, however great and mighty, has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal to the king except the gods, and they don't live among men. This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men in Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and the men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. Now again, this part of the story lets us know Daniel was not included as a counselor to the king. He wasn't in the room when this request was made. However, because he was in the program, because he was in the schooling program to be one of these men, he was now condemned to death. And so somewhere in the second year of his program, maybe towards the end of the third, I don't know how long Nebuchadnezzar had these dreams before he called in his request, but somewhere around that second year, Daniel found out that his life and the life of his friends was going to be ended because of the decree of the king. And so Daniel did what anybody would do. He got his friends together to pray. He said, we need to pray that God will tell us what this dream is and the interpretation of the dream. Now in verse 17 of chapter 1, it tells us that Daniel had the ability to interpret dreams and visions. I don't know if he had done this before. I don't know if this is something that had happened in his life, or maybe this is the first time. And what we read in chapter 17, or in verse 17, is what's taking place here in chapter 2. I don't know, but I do know that he had enough faith to go before God and to ask. And so him and his friends prayed, and the Bible says that God told him the dream and the interpretation. So Daniel, when the executioner came, the executioner came to demand his life, this high school student, this college student, this upstart little Jewish snot boy. Can you imagine having the audacity to look at the guy that's come to kill you and say, hey, we're good. Don't kill anybody. Take me to the king. I got this. Like, I would want to slap him and then kill him. Like, there's no way this little punk is going to tell me that he's interpreted the dream when all these other great men couldn't. Like, the executioner had a job, and that was to kill him. And Daniel, this little high school, college student, looks at him and says, take me to the king. I got this. I got this. And so he goes before the king. And when he goes before the king, he tells the king, I don't know your dream. So wait a minute, you told him to bring him there, and he says, I don't know, but I know somebody who does. He says, I don't know, but I know somebody who does. This is what he says in Daniel chapter 2, verse 27 and 28. It says, Daniel replied, no wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery that he has asked about. But there is a God. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in the days to come. Your dream and the vision that passed through your mind as you lay on your bed were these. And so Daniel begins to tell the king his dream. Verse 29, it says, as you were lying there, O king, your mind turned to the things that are to come, and the revealer of mysteries showed you what is going to happen. As for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because I am greater in wisdom than any other living man, but so that you, O king, might know the interpretation and that you may understand what went through your mind. You looked, O king, and therefore stood before you a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in its appearance. The head of the statue was made of pure gold. The chest and the arms were made of silver. Its belly and thighs of bronze. Its legs of iron. Its feet of partly iron and partly baked clay. While you were watching, a rock was cut out, not by human hands. It struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed them. Then the iron and the clay and the bronze and the silver and the gold were broken into pieces. So at the same time, and they became like chaff on the threshing floor in the summer. The wind swept them away without leaving a trace. But the rock that struck the statue became a huge mountain and filled the whole earth. Daniel began to explain to Nebuchadnezzar that the dream that he had had was about the kingdoms of this world. It was a statue that represented the world's governance system, the world's kingdoms. Let's talk a little bit about the statue for a moment. It was a huge metallic image that would represent the four successive Gentile world powers that would follow after Babylon. So five kingdoms, starting with Babylon, and the four that would succeed them. Now, some of us would read this dream, think it's 2,600 years ago, but can I tell you that what we're about to look at is vitally important to us today? So don't miss the explanation that Daniel has to come. A little bit about the statue real quick, a reminder, the head was of gold, the chest was of silver, the belly and the thigh was of bronze, the legs of iron and the feet of part iron and part clay. If you'll notice that as the progression of metals goes towards the floor, so from the head down, the value of the metal decreases. So gold more valuable than the silver, more valuable than the bronze, more valuable than the iron. But at the same time, even though the value decreases, the density and strength of the metals increases. So gold being softer than silver, being softer than bronze, being softer than iron. And so what this indicates is that each successive kingdom was going to become more brutal in the ways that it dealt with both men and God. That each kingdom would become more of an enemy of the people of God and to God himself. So Daniel goes on to give the interpretation. He's now told this dream that Nebuchadnezzar had that had kept him awake at night. And now we get the interpretation in Daniel chapter 2. Verse 36 through 44. It says, this is the dream, and now we will interpret it to the king. You, O king, are the king of kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he has placed mankind and the beasts of the field and the birds of the air. Wherever they live, he has made you ruler over all. You are the head of gold. After you, another kingdom will rise, inferior to yours. Next, a third kingdom, one of bronze, will rule over the whole earth. Finally, there will be a fourth kingdom as strong as iron, for iron breaks and smashes everything. And as iron breaks things into pieces, so it will crush and break all others. Just as you saw the feet and the toes were partly of baked clay and partly of iron, so this will be a divided kingdom. Yet it will have some of the strengths of iron in it, even as you saw the iron mixed with the clay. As the toes were partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. And just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, so the people will be a mixture and will not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those other kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. See, Daniel explains the interpretation of this dream. He explains that the gold head of this statue represents the Babylonian Empire that would last from 605 BC all the way down to 538 BC. After that kingdom will pass, the next progression would be the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians that goes from 538 BC to 331 BC. The area of bronze is represented by Alexander the Great and the dominance of the Grecian Empire that would go from 331 to 168 BC. The legs of iron and the feet of iron and clay would represent the Roman Empire that would last from 168 BC to 476 AD. Just a note here about the Roman Empire. The term iron is used 14 times in the text to describe Rome in Daniel chapter 2. Rome crushed everything in its path. They were characterized by iron. It was an adjective that was used to describe them, Rome's iron hand, their iron grip, their iron rule. Rome set up this concept or idea that you could bring peace through military power. And if you didn't agree with that, they would kill you and have peace through military power. They were strong as iron. However, as tough as iron may be, the Roman Empire did not last. And eventually it was split into two key kingdoms, a kingdom of the east and of the west. Two different legs developed in that kingdom. The Latin-speaking west with its capital in Rome and the Greek-speaking east with its capital in Constantinople. But the splitting of the Roman Empire by these two political entities was not the last division of that kingdom. For that kingdom continues to influence our world today. You know, when you look at that statue, it goes down into feet and toes. And it shows this, the continued progression of moving from iron and the mixing with baked clay and then down through the 2 feet and into the 10 toes. There's a continued progression of division and lack of unity. Daniel noted that in the king's dream that the feet and toes were composed of a mixture of iron and clay. Do you know that in this interpretation, the toes and the feet must be very important because he spends as much time explaining the feet and toes as he does all the rest of the statue combined? You see, the fall of the Roman Empire in 476 AD was not the end of their influence. For her influence has continued to dominate our culture for the last 2,000 years. See, so many times we look at the picture and we see the divisions, but we forget. The statue itself in totality is the world's system of governance. And it doesn't matter who is in control, it's the same governing system, and it has been in place in our world for 2,600 years. We are still today being influenced by the astronomy of the Babylonians, by the ethics of the Medo-Persian Empire, by the art and the philosophy of the Greek Empire, and we are still trying to have peace through military might in our world, brought to us by the Romans. We still operate under the same world system. And I don't know if you know, but there has been a desire for a long time to see that Roman Empire brought back, to see that unification brought back to the continent of Europe. Charlemagne, Napoleon, I always want to say Neapolitan for some reason. I don't know why. Napoleon, makes me want ice cream. Hitler, they all wanted to put the pieces of the Roman Empire back together. They all wanted to see this thing reunited. Yeah, different look, different face, but same principle. See, our generation has undeniably witnessed part of the fulfillment of this statue prophecy with the coming together of the European Union. Currently now, 28 nations, comprising of more than 510 million people, have come together to unite themselves geographically, politically, financially, and one day, even spiritually. Just think about the fulfillment of the prophecy that Daniel gave to Nebuchadnezzar. Think about the implications. Their slogan is Europe, many tongues, one voice. You know, we've never ever lived in a time where there was more talk about a new world order, a world law, world courts, world currency, world constitution. I've heard talk and rumors of certain trials. Should they be tried under the United States Constitution, or should there be this world constitution? Do you realize that it's into that environment that the pillars of the Antichrist kingdom will rise? A one world government, a global economy, a global religious system. You see, in its final form, this revived Roman Empire will comprise of 10 king states that will yield their power to the Antichrist at the end of the tribulation. Can you see the statue? Can you see the progression towards what he was talking about? Daniel in chapter 2, verse 43 said, "And just as you saw the iron mixed with the baked clay, so the people will be a mixture and they'll not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay." Does that not sound like our world today? Iron and clay. Two sides that do not mix. They cannot think the same. They cannot interact the same. One is crushing while the other one is this softer, pliable, brittle. You just look at our world. That seems to be everywhere when we look around. You know, it makes me wonder. You know, how would 28 nations in a European Union become 10? Well, Britain has already led the exit when they voted to leave the European Union. If you remember back just a few years ago as they talked on the news, there was no way that that vote would be in favor of leaving the European Union. There was no way that would happen. And yet they were so surprised when the votes were counted and Europe saw Britain leave the European Union. And because of that, Sweden, Denmark, the Netherlands, France, Hungary, Greece are all beginning to contemplate that maybe it's time to withdraw instead of being included. The clay and the iron separating, not united, divided. That there's a process that's happening. I don't know how they're going to get there. I don't know where this thing is going. But isn't it amazing that 2,600 years ago in Babylon, a king would have a dream that would still be impacting us today? That we're seeing the fulfillment still today of this dream. Now, I don't want to leave you with just an apocalyptic, we don't know what's going to happen deal, because Daniel tells us what's going to happen. Because there was more to the dream than just the statue. See, Daniel's interpretation reminds us of a day that there is a kingdom that is coming and it's not formed by human hands. And it is going to smash and crush the current world system into oblivion. It says that the iron, the gold, the silver, the bronze, the clay become dust at the impact of this new kingdom. And it's so forceful that it's literally turned into dust and removed to be forgotten. Daniel says, in the time of those kings, which kings? I would assume that he's talking about the 10 kings nation. In the time of those kings, the king or the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all the kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. There is a kingdom that is of a supernatural origin. You know, if you go back and you read the Gospels, Jesus talked about a kingdom. He talked about the kingdom of heaven. He talked about how the kingdom of heaven operated on very different principles. Matter of fact, in Matthew chapter 5, he began to lay out how kingdom people looked a lot different from world system people. He talked about how the meek would inherit the earth. He talked about how blessed people were when they suffered. And he just goes through the list. Do you know what eventually conquered the Roman Empire? Do you know what eventually led to their downfall? It was the Christians they hated so much. See, during the final days of the Roman Empire, when there was disease in the streets, when there were plagues, and when there were things that were going on, the aristocratic people separated themselves not to be infected with the disease, but the Christians who operated from a different principle would go out into the streets and collect the sick and tend to them. They would care for those that were hurting. And when someone died, they would give them a proper burial. You see, they acted counter-culture. And that kingdom of heaven that is so different from that world system changes everything. Jesus came to bring a different way.
a different way of thinking, a different way of acting, and a different way of living. And he brought it as this movement that grows inside of us, but there is coming a day where it's going to be violent in the sense that he is going to come with an impact that will change everything. You see, this message wraps up in Revelation chapter 11, verse 15, where it says, "And the seventh angel sounded, and there was a great voice in heaven saying, 'The kingdoms of this world are becoming the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever.'" I want to be on the right side of the impact of that meteor when it comes. I don't want to be in the world system when that comes. I want to be in a position. So, this is a nice message. It's fun. Dreams, visions. But some of you are sitting there saying, what in the world does this have to do with me? What can I take home? I can't go home and talk to my friends about statues and gold and meteorites and crazy kings and bad dreams. I need something I can take home with me. Okay, let's go back to the beginning. Remember that snotty-nosed little teenager named Daniel? Daniel was given an opportunity. He wasn't anybody yet. He'd done nothing. He was in school. He hadn't reached his degree. He hadn't reached his place. He hadn't really gotten to where he wanted to be. And he could have made all of excuses of why not to get involved. And yet, instead of looking at his limitations and his situation, he said, God, tell me the vision and the dream. See, some of you in this room, you're in school, high school, college, and you're waiting. Well, once I graduate, I can do a missions trip. Or once I graduate, I can start helping out with a class. Or once I get done with my studies, I can be more financially able to do the things that I'm supposed to do. I mean, once I get to that place. And some of you were like, well, you know, once I got out of school, then it was when I get married. And then it was when I have kids and when the kids are grown and when the kids are out. And some of you are like, oh, just wait till I retire. Well, you're retired. What are you waiting on? Some of you need to get up and go on a missions trip. Some of you need to get up and go with me to Panama. You say, well, I'm too old to go to Panama. Those kids need grandparents to come and show them how life's supposed to be. Like, they need young people to come and show them how to be people of God. They need adults to come and show them how parents are supposed to act and supposed to love. Like, God's calling all of you. We can't take 2,000 people, though. It's only 30 right now. So get your applications in next Sunday. But we got a team going to Kenya. We've got teams that are going to northern Missouri. There's places for you to get involved. You say, well, I don't want to do a missions trip. Fine, maybe God's not calling you to a missions trip, but maybe he's calling you to teach a class. Or maybe he's calling you to get involved in a small group. Or maybe he's calling you to just get up and do something. Because if you don't, you are going to die. Because that's where we find ourselves. The executioner is coming to kill your soul, and you have a choice to get up and get involved or get lost in the fact that your dreams died. Look, I'm sorry that you got taken into captivity and your dreams are dead, but maybe you need to start living for the dreams of somebody else. That's where this applies. That's how this affects your life. It's more than a come feel good on Sunday morning. It's a come do something. If you couldn't find a parking spot today, that was God telling you to help in the parking ministry. I just thought of that, so that was inspired. You know, it's so easy when we hear a story like this to get lost in the mystical and get lost in the interpretation, to get lost in the... Part of this is about Daniel. Just being willing to be available, to take a stand. We don't get an indication that he was before the king before this. We don't get an indication that he had stepped out at all. All he had done is traded his steak for some vegetables. That was his big stand-up moment. And now to go before the king and say, oh, I got this. Let me tell you what you dreamed in the interpretation. If he'd have been wrong, he would have died. Well, he's going to die anyway, but I guess you could go make it up. But he trusted God. And some of you are like, I don't want to tell my friends about Jesus because what if I tell them the wrong story? Jesus died for them. It's that easy. You can do something. So stop waiting for tomorrow. Stop waiting and just get up and make yourself available. Say, God, would you show me? So before I get to the second application, I just want to stop the service right now and give you a chance to respond to that. And you know, sometimes we'll have forward moving altar calls, but I want to do this a little different, because when I read in the story, what Daniel did was Daniel took a stand and then he invited those that were close to him into his circle and said, would you pray for me? Because this is a big deal. So instead of moving towards the front, if you're at the point where you say, I need to move, I need to step out, I need to take a risk or a chance, maybe it's at work, maybe it's in your family, wherever it is, if that's you, I want to invite you to stand to your feet. I just want to invite you to stand. And as you're standing, I want you to look around, and if you have a friend or a family member that's sitting beside you, would you invite them to stand with you? And would you be brave enough to share with them what's in your heart right now and say, would you pray for me in this moment? And then if you're sitting near somebody standing, would you be just a family member enough to stand up and lay a hand on their shoulder and begin to pray for them? You don't have to know what's going on in their life. You don't have to know the details. But would you move to somebody that's standing up right now? And would you just be family enough? You say, well, I don't know them. You're at church. We're the family of God. Introduce yourself. But would you pray for them for a few moments? And let's just see if God would renew dreams and visions in this room. Let's just take a moment and begin to pray for each other right now.